But the first thing I'm going to do is what I do every year. I'm going to light a candle, a little candle that I have here in front of me on the table of my broadcast booth. We call it the Tabernacle of Truth, erected out here on the street. And I'm going to light this candle as a memorial candle for all of the homeless people who have died homeless, who have died on the street, who have died in shelters, who have died in transitional housing, who have died in doorways, have died in subways. Because if there's one thing we want to remember about homelessness, it's a matter of life and death for the people who are homeless. We want to remember that this is not just a political issue. We want to remember that this is a human tragedy and a nightmare for the people who are caught up in it. And it's something that we all have a responsibility to do something about. You're supposed to, when you get out of prison, you're supposed to be released to an address, but the address that you get released to is a homeless shelter.
Yeah, they have said repeatedly in many different forms that they don't do that. The parole board says we don't do that. The APA downtown says we don't do that. No one will acknowledge that this is what they do, but yet they can email, they'll fax you paperwork before you're released, like they did me, and say this is where you must report. You must report to 2100 Lakeside. There is no question that this is what they do. They parole you to the street. They help make you homeless.
Terry, let me ask you, and I know there's people thinking this out there, okay? You sound articulate, you know, you may have messed up, but you're a capable person. Why don't you just go get a job and get an apartment and get out of the shelter?
Well, see, the disease of addiction just gets to you in such a way that over the years, you go from job to job to job. And after a certain period of time, you can make up a resume and go out and put resumes in and put applications in and try to have interviews with people. And they look at your resume and they look at your application and they wonder what's wrong with this guy. Mm-hmm. You know, why can't he hold on to a job? You know, and I'm starting to get my life together now, and I'm having a hard time finding a job because nobody wants to hire someone with basically the track record that I have for employment. Okay. Some of the jobs that I've had, I was a very good worker at. Anybody that knows people that are in recovery will tell you that we're very hard workers, right. Very hard workers, and we just need to get that chance. We need someone to give us that chance to get back into the workforce, to get back into living life and becoming useful citizens again, you know, so people don't look at us and look down their nose at us and so on.
Is this a case of God may forgive you, but society won't?
Bingo. You got it right there. God, my God looks at me and he says, you know what? He says, whatever you've done, it's okay. But get up and wipe yourself off and move forward. And society doesn't do that. They still look down their nose at you and say, you know what? You're not worthy. You're not worth it.
They're sitting up there spending more money abroad than they are at home. I always thought charity begins at home and then abroad.
Right.
If you address the issue of how many homeless people you have here in this country alone, think of how much money you sunk into the different wars that have been going on. Half of that money could have been spent to alleviate half of the strain that's on the system.
As a homeless person, are you bitter about that?
I'm not really bitter. I'm confused by it. It doesn't make sense.
I understand that you got a dishonorable discharge, and it's hard to really move forward with something like that. But there is hope for you. You can always come to 2100, get into a program.
Man, that's like a mini city of wars, man. They had a 19-year-old kid killed there last week.
At 2100?
A 19-year-old kid.
Is that true?
Honest to God, I ain't lying.
You come to 2100, get into a program, and you get your low-income housing. You just got to do the program.
JD, where are you living now?
You got a bridge over here next to us over here?
Yep.
Right there.
You're living under the bridge.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for being on our show.
I advise you to come to 2100, get into a program, and within 6 months, you have some housing.
Well, it's old people, man, are really discriminated down there, man. The young people, they play Terminator down there. I'm being honest with you.
No, if you're over 50, they help you.
Man, if you've been down there, you know what I'm talking about.
If you're over 50, they'll help you.
I'm not saying they're going to help you, but can you survive? Can you live there while you're doing it, getting help?
Okay, JB wants to say something.
That is not true. I work under one of the primary coordinated groups there at the shelter. And that simply isn't true. We open our doors, our hearts, our minds, our souls, everything to everybody that comes into that door, into that building. We even go outside, and especially my boss, he's gone out and taken guys off the street that refused to even come into a shelter. No shelter, no homeless environment is 100% plus safe. You're going to have your negative responses. You're going to have your negative circumstances no matter how you look at it, no matter what you do. None of it is absolutely perfect. If it was perfect, it wouldn't be needing the assistance that it does. So right. You're going to have those bad elements. Unfortunately, yes, that was a death that occurred outside the building, not inside. And it was not at the fault of the community there. They did everything they could to protect everyone there. Everyone is protected as best they can. And the elderly people are most absolutely looked after. They get the greatest concern. It's just that our budget does not allow us to be...
Excuse me, JB. I put up with a lot of stuff on this show, but I am not going to have someone in their 50s referred to as elderly. I'm in my 50s.
I'm 53, almost 54.
All right,
54.
Now you're treading on the fighting side of me.
Talking about is that we have a couple of gentlemen down at the community right now that are over 80 and 90 years old.
And the reason that I say what I do about discrimination for the elderly in homeless shelters is because, especially in 2100, the older people I know, most of them, they band together. We stay together because it's more safety in numbers, first of all. A lot of young kids are out there, they come in from prison, they come in from all kinds of areas, and they don't care about nothing, man. They just drop them off from the damn bus that comes out from the state penitentiary, drops them off right in front. I've seen it. I've seen a van pull up there, drop off 12 convicts that were just released because of a reason, whatever. They served their time, whatever. And these guys won't care. They're playing Terminator. They're beating up on people. They're intimidating them. They're trying to take their money. A little bit of cigarette you have, they're going to steal, and you can't do nothing. You go up to see one of these supervisors, like JB. I'm not saying it's you, JB, okay? But I'm just saying there's a lot of these supervisors over there. They don't care about what you got. Somebody takes your cigarettes, who cares? They're not going to go looking for people. And if you rat people out, you're going to get beat down. This is the world of homelessness. This is the world of youth over the ages. Age people, man. The older people are the ones that suffer more when they're homeless than the regular people.
Well, I'm in two places at once tonight because I'm nobody. And at the microphone, we have nobody from Nebraska. Nobody, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
How you doing?
Well, good. What's on your mind, nobody?
Yeah, I just want to say they're sugarcoating this, you know. And all three of them sitting up there know better. 2100 is a hellhole. That's the bottom line. I've seen people get hurt, and they talk about the way things are down there and all this. Come and look. That's all I can say for you is come and look for yourself. Come and look in there. Look at how nasty it is in there, how people do this and do that and run here and run that, sell this, sell that, threaten other people. Yeah, you know, they got sections in there that they call a good section or whatever, the emergency section. Before I left them over there this evening, two dudes were getting ready to rumble right in the front door about a sandwich. You know, there's some churches that stopped coming there because they acted so crazy getting lined up to go get something to eat, fighting to get in the line. And, you know, I see some dudes there, they looking at me. But they know I'm telling the truth. They know it. That sugarcoat and stuff.
You live there?
Yes, I do.
So you're saying it's not a good shelter?
No, it's not a good place.
Let me ask you something. Have you ever gone to any of these other places around town here?
Yes, I have.
Let me finish the question first. Have you ever gone to any of these other places around town here that do serve dinners and food and not seen a rumble? Be honest. Not seen a rumble ever in your life at any of these other places?
Right. But you know why?
You never have?
You want to know why?
Why?
Because the other people have a lot more control. If you act up there, you're gone.
Okay.
You're gone. That's it. You're gone.
Guess what? It's the same thing at 2100. I've seen many men get put out.
I was homeless at first, and I didn't know how to handle myself. At least I had a friend that helped me out and everything. And everything went on good. He got me actually in a place. So I actually got a place in Lakewood, Cleveland area. but I
can't. Well, Tommy, let me ask you this. Are you saying then really that it was critical that you had some support system, having a friend is what made the difference for you?
Yes.
And in that sense, do you think it's the function of government to be essentially a friend to the people who don't have friends?
Yes. I wish they would do something about getting people off the streets and all this.
My question for Dennis is, what's the best way to get out of homelessness? How do we get out of this hole?
Well, you know, first of all, how long have you been homeless?
Since I got kicked out of my last place I was living.
So how long is that?
Oh, it's got to be at least 6 months.
First thing is to, more than anything, want a home and start to think about what you can do to help take steps towards that. Now, we have an obligation in society to provide housing for everyone. But while we're trying to have the society that creates those conditions, for you being out there without a home, I want to give you some encouragement and let you know that never give up trying to find a home, and also never give up trying to find a job if there's some work you can do so you can get some roof over your head. There's nothing more discouraging than being out on the street and thinking there's no tomorrow. But if you start to if you just start telling yourself, look, you know, I start seeing yourself in a home, start imagining yourself in that home, and start doing something every day to get out, you know, on the streets and get in the flow and create this new opportunity. Never resign yourself to being homeless. It's going to change. But just, you know, you're the one that has to do it. In the meantime, my role as a congressman and the next president is to create programs where no one in this country need ever be homeless, that we make sure we have affordable housing for people who have a job, that we create jobs so people can have a place, a roof over their heads. You know, these are the kinds of things that I'm concerned about.
That's, I agree with you 100%. I think the hardest part is to break out of this funk.
Some of you may know and have heard the story that when I was growing up in Cleveland, I grew up the oldest of seven. My parents never owned a home, and by the time I was 17, as we kept moving, we lived in 21 different places, including a couple cars. So I had the experience as a young person of being homeless, of living in a car. And I remember that. And that's one of the reasons why I have a special commitment to people who find themselves in a situation, for some it's just mind-boggling that they're without a roof over their head. And that's why we have an obligation to help each other. That's what life ought to be about. It shouldn't just be about looking the other way when you see someone out in the street sitting on a grate in the, you know, 0 degree weather, you know, pulling some blankets over them. You know, we have an obligation to stop and talk and help, and that's, you know, and to bring people off the streets and give them a chance.
You know, I was able to get through it. I suppose I was clever sometimes, and I was lucky sometimes, and I finally managed to get my feet on the ground and a couple of paychecks, and I'm older now. I think it was easier when I was younger to be in that situation. You know, it's not as easy anymore. I'm sure that if people who find themselves homeless now don't have it a lot harder than I did when I was young. It was just easier.